Felt I should put in some new material, and Danny did very much regret not being able to go, but unfortunately United Airlines, for unknown reasons, canceled the flight, and they said, oh sure, we'll get you there, how about next Friday? And even Danny isn't able to travel on close time-like curves. So this is work I did originally with Alexander Smith, who's in the audience here, and I've done some follow-up work not yet published with Andreas Waldenberger, Paulina Corona Nugaldi, and Eduardo Martin Martinez, and the work that Alex and I have done will soon be in FISREV A. Oh, and I guess that's why I have this. So probably motivation isn't too serious an issue with an audience like this, but we all know the basic question of interest that motivates this subject is what happens to entanglement and other measures of quantum correlations between quantum states if they are in relative motion. And Danny, along with Perez and Scudo, asked this question for inertial frames, and Paul Alsing and Gerard Milburn followed it up, and we've already heard how that situation, what came out of that situation in other talks. Basically, they found that entanglement was constant between inertially moving observers, but some degrees of freedom could be transferred to others. But when we get to non-inertial frames, as shown in this work here now of 7 to 8 years ago, teleportation fidelity was found to decrease as acceleration increased, and for a bipartite system, entanglement was found to degrade as acceleration went up. So here's the cartoon scenario of the situation here. Between, for entangled state shared between Alice and Bob, such as this one right here, we can ask how we could measure the degree of entanglement between these two states. This is a maximally entangled one. And then we can ask what happens to this situation if Bob becomes the accelerated Rob moving along some uniformly accelerated trajectory. And the answer to that question is addressed by going to the celebrated Rindler frame, and as was discovered now on the order of 4 decades ago, the quantization of fields in different coordinates is different. So Alice has a time-like killing vector d by dt that would help her distinguish what she would call positive and negative frequency states, whereas the accelerated Rob would use d by d, that should say tau, not eta, d by d tau, and that would let that would be how the accelerated Rob would distinguish positive negative frequency. And these are incommensurate pictures in the sense that the notion of a particle for her is not the same as the notion of a particle or antiparticle for him. So the inertial Bob, for example, might say, oh yes, here is the ground state of a system, whereas the accelerated Rob would see this bosonic state become a thermal ensemble of excited states here, or if the initial state were fermionic, then this kind of situation between a two-level thermal excited state here. And this is what is known as the celebrated Unruh effect, and it occurs because the accelerated Rob is causally disconnected from region two, as has been pointed out in several talks already. And so having no access to this region of space-time here, that one must necessarily trace over that region of space-time, leading to a thermal system, either for the bosons or for the fermions here. And as was discovered in these papers I mentioned earlier, logarithmic negativity was found to decay to zero for bosons, but not so for fermions. And this is the Alice-Rob correlation, the Rob-anti-Rob, which was introduced in other talks, the fictitious observer in region two. And Alice and anti-Rob too have these varying correlations. Likewise, the mutual information decays to from a high of two to a value of one as acceleration becomes infinite in the bosonic case, and to these corresponding values here for fermions. So all of that was known about, or discovered, I guess, about 7 years ago. A number of questions were since asked as to what causes this. Does the surviving entanglement depend on the choice of maximally entangled state? No. Does spin matter? Yes, but only in a quantitative sense. It doesn't really change any of the qualitative results. Does the number of excited modes matter? No, for fermions. The entanglement degradation is still limited, but for bosons, it does weakly depend on that, and I'll show a graph later. What really matters in the distinction between bosons and fermions has to do with the bosonic versus fermionic statistics of the system, and these questions were examined in a series of papers by Juan Leon and Eduardo Martin Martinez, and I will not say anything more about that at the moment, but I'm mentioning this because we're going to make use of this fact here for some of the results later on in the talk. So the main event that I want to get to is an examination of multipartite systems, and the simplest number beyond two, at least for me, is three. So one asks, what is the situation between Alice Bob and a third observer, or a third detector, if you want to put it that way, Charlie, and in particular, we're interested in the kind of overlap that comes for all three such observers, an entanglement that would vanish if any one of them were to not be there. And in particular, we want to ask what happens when Bob becomes the uniformly accelerated Rob. So, this question was first looked at late in 2010 by this Korean group, Hwang, Park, and Young, and they looked at the bosonic case, generalizing the approach that Yvette and I took a number of years ago, and they found that the tripartite entanglement remained finite in the infinite acceleration limit. One tangles vanished, and the pi tangle, which I'll describe momentarily, remained finite. Fermionic systems were looked at by a Chinese collaboration, Wang and Jing, and they found that it remained finite. They found that tripartite entanglement remained finite in the infinite acceleration limit as well. Both the one tangles and the pi tangle remained finite, and there was no bipartite entanglement generated from the acceleration. So this was already a hint that tripartite entanglement was different, particularly from this case, in that using the same kind of methods that were developed for the bipartite case, in which entanglement or measures of entanglement such as negativity degraded to zero, here this is not the case. So it seems perhaps that multipartite entanglement might be telling us something different about the relationship between quantum information and space-time. And so let's go ahead with what these things are. If you want to look at tripartite entanglement, a measure that was constructed on the order of 12 years ago was something called the three-tangle, which is given by this quantity here, where C is the maximum between zero and this linear combination of eigenvalues, where you take the eigenvalues of, as it turns out, a two-state, you take the eigenvalues of a two-state system, and then you construct them in increasing sequence like so, and take the biggest one and subtract the three smaller, and then switch between A, B, and C, and you construct this quantity called tau. And these lambdas are the eigenvalues of the square root of rho tilde rho, where rho tilde is essentially an analog of a positive partial, is an analog of the partial transpose matrix. You take rho star and then multiply by sigma y cross sigma y on each side. But the problem is that this really only works for pure states. And when we have an accelerated observer, we have a thermal bath, so we necessarily have mixed states. So what Wu and Fan developed 5 years ago now, I guess, is a quantity called the pi tangle, which is defined here, where pi is a quantity analogous to this quantity here using the concurrence. It instead uses this quantity called the one tangle and the two tangle, where the one tangle of A, of subsystem A relative to the BC pair, is given by the partial transpose with respect to observer A. You take the trace norm of that, subtract one, and likewise for A with subsystem B, it's an analogous quantity except you've traced first over subsystem C before taking the partial transpose. That's called the two tangle. So you take the two tangle and subtract off, let's say you wanted the pi of A, you would take the one tangle for A and then subtract off the two tangles for A with B and A with C, and then you symmetrize over A, B, and C, take the average, and that's what you would call the pi tangle. Where this norm, as I said, it's the trace of the square root of AA dagger. So here's what the Korean group found. They found that for the GHZ state given here, the one tangle starts, of course, at the maximal value of unity for zero acceleration and then falls off, whereas the two tangle part here goes down to a finite non-zero value. Here's the pi tangle. The pi tangle does decrease not to zero, but to pi over six asymptotically in the limit the acceleration gets large. For the W states, they looked at those as well. W states are defined by this tripartite entangled combination. And again, the two tangle goes to zero for the accelerated observer. Sorry, I should have said that. This is the accelerated observer here, the blue one. Whereas if you look at the two tangles for either of the non-accelerated observers, they go to a finite value. They, of course, have to be the same because Alice and Charlie are effectively symmetric in this case, whereas Rob is one of the accelerated qubits here. The pi tangles go to, well, for the accelerated one, it drops to zero, but for the other two, it doesn't. So if you look at the total pi tangle for the W state, it asymptotes to this value of 0.176. So to the extent one was willing to accept pi tangle as a measure of bona fide tripartite entanglement, this is telling us that it is not falling off to zero. What about the fermionic case that's examined by Wang and Jing? Well, here they looked at the GHZ state. This is Alice, Charlie, Rob, Charlie, Alice, Rob, Rob, Alice, Charlie, and you can see the graphs here. They also looked at GHZ when one observer was accelerated and two observers were accelerated. And again, they find that they decline, of course, but not right to zero, but to finite values once again. Now that, of course, is not a surprise given that the bosonic or the fermionic bipartite cases didn't decay to zero either. So what about generalized tripartite states? Well, for the rest of this talk, I'm going to look at two of them. One is the so-called generalized GHZ state or GGHZ state, which is this linear combination of zeros and ones, and the other is the maximally symmetric state where you take this linear combination of the last qubit. The three tangle can be calculated using, that's the quantity tau I said before, using the methods I had before in the non-accelerated case because it's a pure state, and likewise for this MS state here. And what we want to do, what Alex and I looked at, was these two states to illustrate the relationship between entanglement and non-locality. And basically, very little has been looked at in terms of non-locality for non-inertial observers and states in curved space-time. And I think there's actually quite a lot of interesting things that might be found out here. How do we look at inequality? Well, we have the well-known Bell inequalities that are given by this relationship here at the top, where A and B are operators that I will describe on subsequent slides, but they're basically measurement operators and their correlations. This actually is the CHSH inequality that was derived from Bell's work, all bipartite entangled states violate these Bell CHSH inequalities. So quantum mechanics can make this equality larger than 2, whereas local hidden variable theories force it to be less than or equal to 2. So if you can get a state where you've beaten this, then you do not have something that's described by some local hidden variable theory. The amount of violation increases with increasing entanglement. Well, Svetlitny wondered what would happen to this for tripartite states. And he came up with this inequality here, where now the upper bound is 4 instead of 2, and you have 3 operators instead of the 2 operators here. And the point of this inequality is that if you have a set of 3 states that are entangled, it might be that you don't have genuine tripartite entanglement. You might just have different combinations of bipartite entanglements. If that is the case, you will not be able to get larger than 4. Whereas if you have bona fide tripartite entanglement, you will find that you will get violation of this. In other words, only when all 3 qubits are non-locally correlated can you violate this number 4 here in this equality, and that was shown in this paper back in 1987. And I believe actually at the IQC there was the first measurement of a violation of this inequality in the not too distant past, by which I mean within the last year. So let's look first at the bipartite case. We have 2 operators, A and B. I said I would describe them. Here they are. Alice, we have a 2-state entangled system coming out, and Alice could choose to measure along either this axis or that one, and Bob along this axis or that one, and the Bell CHSH inequality says that if you take the expectation value of this combination of operators, then you've always got to get less than 2, because the maximal values of any one of these is between plus and minus 1, and you can do the arithmetic and show that must be true if classical physics or a local hidden variable theory applies. In the Svetlitny case, the analogous situation is here, where each observer has the choice of measuring along a pair of any axes they like. So we've got Alice, Bob, and Charlie looking at this situation. And so you perform an analogous calculation to what is done that is more familiar in the Bell CHSH case. So why did we look at the MS and GGHZ states? Well, the reason had to do with this paper by Shohini Ghose and collaborators that came out in 2009. And basically, they found there was a relationship between tripartite non-locality and tripartite entanglement, in that for the MS state, you always violated the Svetlitny inequality, and the greater the amount of tripartite entanglement above 0, the more that happened. For the GGHZ state, at first you went down to some minimum, but then you started monotonically increasing after this value over here. So the fact that these states were good candidates for violating the Svetlitny inequality is what motivated us to try and see, all right, what happens if Bob gets in a rocket and takes off? So we did this for fermionic states because they are 2-level systems and naturally lend themselves to this type of analysis. The singlet state, for example, is here. And what we chose our axes such that these angles are equal, and you can show that there's a nice expression for this CHSH quantity here, given in terms of cos gamma and the acceleration parameter r. So when r is 0, you just get this quantity, which is given in textbooks. And without going through the analysis due to lack of time, we found there is this island here is where you will violate the Bell inequalities. But as acceleration gets larger, eventually you lose. And for observers of a sufficient degree of acceleration, they will not see any violation of CHSH for these states. And there's an analogous discussion in this paper by these authors in PhysRev A that came out last year. These papers appeared basically at the same time that we had, well, we were green. Anyway, ours is going in. So this is what it looks like. And you can optimize by choosing a certain value of gamma, but ultimately, if the acceleration is large enough, you just can't win. Well, what about GGHZs and non-locality? This is what Alex and I took a look at. And you, again, can construct the density matrices in the accelerated case, calculate the pi tangle, and you discover here's acceleration getting bigger, here's the theta parameter in GGHZ, and you get this symmetric double-humped pattern that declines, but the pi tangle, consistent with the results of the Korean group, does not decline to zero. It's non-vanishing everywhere in the infinite acceleration limit, except, of course, at these special values of theta right here. What we found was quite intriguing is the Svetlikny inequality can be violated everywhere except right at this, well, let me say it the other way. You can violate the Svetlikny inequality for all values of R, provided you choose theta appropriately, except right at this corner here, where if you choose theta to R to be its largest possible value, which is the infinite acceleration limit, and theta to be over here, then you drop right down to the limit of 4. So this is strikingly different from the Bell CHSH case. And in other words, since it's not physically possible to go to infinite acceleration, you can always violate the tripartite non-locality inequality. What about the MS case? Well, here's the pi tangle for that. And again, we find finite values everywhere except right along these lines at the extreme values of theta. This is for qubit 3. Where this is if the accelerated observer is along qubit 3, this is if the accelerated observer is along qubit 2 or qubit 1, it doesn't matter because those cases are symmetric. And you might say, well, gee, these graphs don't look a whole lot different. In fact, they are different. This is a plot of the difference between them that shows there really is a distinction as to whether the accelerated observer is detecting qubit 3 in the MS case or qubit 2. So that's the reason for that plot. What about the fermionic non-locality case? Well, again, we see, depending on how you choose the parameter theta 3, you can always violate the Svetlikny inequality. It's different for qubit 3 than it is for qubit 2. So what you measure for non-locality will care about which qubit the accelerated observer is measuring. Here's acceleration, here's theta 3. So again, as with the bosonic case, there's always some violation of Svetlikny if you choose the parameters appropriately. What about the bosonic case? Well, this was looked at more recently by Paulina, Eduardo, and me. This is work in progress. We're still finishing up. In the bosonic case, you have an infinite number of mode excitations, so the double axis system for CHSH doesn't apply. But we thought, why not lean on the results that Juan and Eduardo found a couple of years ago, that if you actually take the bosonic case and truncate it, you still find qualitatively similar results to what was found for decline of logarithmic negativity with acceleration, for example. So here's a graph from Juan and Eduardo's paper, and I don't know if you can quite see the numbers, but basically the different curves correspond to different values of how you truncate the bosonic spectrum. N equals infinity is this one here. This is N equals 15, the purple one, and N equals 2, and so on. So we truncated to N equals 2, and you can debate about how meaningful that is, but you don't get garbage. You do get a result that is qualitatively different from the fermionic case. Namely, there's a little island where the Svetlikny inequality is violated, but if acceleration gets large enough, eventually you decline below zero. This line here at R equals zero is what Shohini Ghose and collaborators found, and as acceleration gets bigger, you generalize that. Now, whether or not you can make sense of this for more bosonic modes, or in the case where you have infinitely many, of course, is not clear, but it does at least hint that non-locality is different in the tripartite case for bosonic as opposed to fermionic systems. All right, for the remainder of the talk, I want to focus on bosonic squeeze state entanglement. So here the idea is Alice, Bob, and Charlie each share two-mode squeeze states. So you have operators A dagger A, AI A dagger J that obey these relations, commutation relations, otherwise they commute with each other. And you construct a squeeze state out of this operator U of S, where U of S is given by this relatively well-known thing for practitioners in the discipline of e to the minus s over 2 a dagger minus aa. You can form a set X where the X set of operators X hat, where the X hat I, X hat J have a commutator that's given by this symplectic matrix omega ij. They're taken by forming linear combinations, A plus A dagger and A minus A dagger. The analog of the interesting quantity here to look at is this covariance matrix sigma, which is given by S IS transpose, where S is a matrix that you can form by brute force computing this exponential. And there is an inequality for entangled states that basically is given by the sum of this matrix plus I times this symplectic matrix here. This is a kind of a generalization of the uncertainty principle for Gaussian states. So in the bipartite case, this was looked at by Yvette Fuentes, Gerardo Adesso, and Marie Erickson a number of years ago. They found that the entanglement vanished between the lowest frequency modes and that the inertial entanglement redistributed itself into multipartite quantum correlations amongst the inaccessible and accessible modes. For one accelerated observer, it was redistributed in tripartite correlations between the original bipartite Gaussian state plus whatever you got for the thermal bath. And you could actually, because of the methods used here, you could actually easily accelerate both observers and look at what happens. And then they found there was effectively quatripartite correlations because each observer, I guess you have a rob and a, I don't know, a ralis maybe, and an anti-rob and an anti-ralis, if you want to say that. I don't know what to call Alice when she's accelerating Alice. Anyway, so because of that, you have a possible quatripartite correlation. And these results were all described here. But the classical correlations were degraded, entanglement completely vanished. At finite acceleration, you have this sudden death phenomenon that Shi-Yun mentioned earlier and that Davis Stapchuk, Shi-Yun, and Baylock Hu and I found in a paper we did that's coming out in JHEP in the near future. Okay, well, so Andreas Waldenberger and I wanted to look at the tripartite case. So you start off with inertial tripartite Gaussian states, and then you accelerate somebody, and you see what happens. So in the accelerating case, Bob will become Rob, and so you generate this effectively block 4x4 correlation matrix, Alice, Charlie, Rob, and anti-Rob. So in other words, just as for bipartite, when you went to an accelerated observer, you got a 3x3 block tripartite matrix, Alice, Rob, anti-Rob. Now we've got a quatripartite case because we've got Alice, Charlie, Rob, anti-Rob. So to quantify entanglement, I guess I've got, how much time have I got left? Okay, I'll skip along quickly. Gerardo, Adesso, and Luminati found that you can look at what is effectively the residual entanglement, where you look at what is the entanglement between one subsystem and everybody else minus all the bipartite correlations between one subsystem and another. So if you have three, for example, you look at one with the other two and then one with the first and one with the second. If you have four, one with everybody, one with the first, one with the second, one with the third, and so on. And this entanglement matrix that you use, this is true for any measure of entanglement. So you use the contangle as defined in these papers here. And basically, the contangle is given by this function of this quantity M, where M is found by optimizing this covariance matrix over all possible pure states that are not larger than the covariance matrix of the mixed state. If the states are separable, M has to be 1. If the state is pure, the optimum is sigma. And if for a mixed state, this thing will in general have some interesting non-zero value. And this is called the Gaussian convex roof. So what we did is look at everything we could possibly calculate in this case. The first is one with everything else, which means Alice, let's say, with Charlie Rob and Auntie Rob or other combinations. And the result that you get is given by this complicated quantity here that depends on an angle, theta, and you have to optimize this quantity over here with this angle where A and C are parameters that depend on the Gaussian states in the system. And basically what happens in the accelerated case is a measure of this quantity M, for example, you can look at tau, but it's increases the same way M does. So here's, let's look at Rob, for example. Here's Rob. The measure of value of M of Rob with the rest of the system, Alice, Charlie, Auntie Rob, and these different leaves correspond to different possible values of the acceleration Rob could have. So this quantity M, as these parameters C and A increase, can get larger, and as acceleration gets larger, this discrepancy in M grows. This is the analogous thing for Auntie Rob and the rest. This is Charlie with Alice, Rob, and Auntie Rob. And no matter what the acceleration is, you always get this same kind of value. So in the here's more results in the 1 plus 1 case. Finally, so this, maybe I shouldn't go through this too quickly. This is Rob and Charlie. This is M versus the acceleration parameter in Charlie. This is M versus the squeeze state parameters for Charlie and Alice along here. And they're the same no matter what the acceleration is here. This is taken for a particular acceleration. This is taken over a graph of acceleration versus Charlie's squeeze parameter, taking Alice's to be the same. And we discover, of course, there is degradation as is the case for Rob and Anti-Rob. This actually, the value of M grows as a function of R. So then you can look at residual quatrepartite entanglement, which is given by this quantity here. You can also calculate that. So this saturates, as it turns out, at a finite value of R coming down here when basically the acceleration parameter is 2.5. So I think basically this is a good time to close off. What I hope I've done in this talk is give you a bit of a flavor of the kinds of things we're trying to do with the tripartite case, both for entanglement and non-locality. The interesting things are that relativistic tripartite entanglement degrades less than the bipartite case, and this residual contangle saturates at finite acceleration. Tripartite non-locality is correlated with tripartite entanglement, but unlike the bipartite counterpart, Bell CHSH, it persists to arbitrarily large accelerations. And I think there's still more to be understood. We haven't examined all the possibilities for the distinct possible combinations of unruh states with QL and QR. We have yet actually to even fully map out the territory for these cases. That's why it's ongoing work. But it does seem that for accelerated observers, there is something different about combining three systems together. And I still don't quite understand what that is, but I guess I believe there might be some gold in them Nar Hills. Thank you.
Okay, are there any questions? Yeah, Nick.
Thanks for the talk, Ralph. I noticed you had a lot of results, and I wondered if there was a way that you could, personally, I don't know anything about this, but personally, I have trouble distilling out some sort of nice, neat intuition from this. Is there anything you can provide?
At this stage, not really. As I said, what we're doing is mapping out the territory. The only intuition seems to be, I guess, that if you lock all three things together in a way that you've got a genuine tripartite entanglement such that if you took one away, the whole thing would go to zero. I guess here's my crude intuition now. In the bipartite case, the intuition was that you've got Alice and Bob, they have maximal entanglement. As one of them accelerates, there's necessarily entanglement with the thermal bath from the Unruh effect, and that causes the entanglement between these three to degrade. Now, for the tripartite case, presumably something similar is going on, but this three-way link seems to be more robust against thermal effects. Some of it comes into play, it's falling off, but I think by the contrivance of demanding it's not just bipartite, 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 it seems that you've got resistance to what a thermal bath could do. One might be able to discover some, I don't know how much work has been done looking at tripartite cases in thermal baths, but presumably there must be some kind of analogous effects there, I would guess.
Not on. Any other questions? Yeah, over there. Oh, before that, Rob, can we use your computer for the next talk? Because he does. Okay, now.
Well, if you say please.
Please, could you? Thank you very much. So just bring the drive. Okay, next question now, please.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I'm familiar with the three tangle. It has the SLOCC symmetry SL2 cubed. What symmetry does the pi tangle have?
To my knowledge, just permutation symmetry amongst the three. It's designed to be permutation symmetric, but that's it. I'm not aware of anything else. But it doesn't, we used it because of the first one doesn't work for mixed states.
So, yeah.
I guess we got to move on, right?
Sorry?
We've got to move on, right?
Yeah, we have to move on. Before that, just a question by me, which is, I keep on consistently hearing about the following question. Now, you have the opportunity to either deny it or admit it. So, the name Rob for the accelerated observer has anything to do with you? Yes or no? Okay.
Good. Paul can answer that.
Use the mic.
I'm happy to ascribe, I was the one who introduced that. I'm happy to ascribe it to Rob, but it wasn't due to Rob. It's before I knew him. It was simply that Rob is another name for Bob, and the R was for Rindler. That's all. And then Rob came along, and then I figured people would assume that, so I'm happy to have that.
Okay, so this closes long open question. So next speaker, where's the next speaker? Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, of course.